Hey, it's Scott, and guess what? You're about to hear an ad. And that's both good and bad. It's good because ads are what make it possible for me to keep bringing you these episodes. And it's bad because, well, maybe you don't like listening to ads, and I get that. And the good news is, you don't have to. When you sign up to support the show, you get every single episode without any ads. Plus, you get all the bonus episodes. Yeah, did you know there are actually bonus episodes? And you can try it all for free just to see what it's like. If you're on an iPhone, just go to the What Was That Like podcast and at the top, click on Try Free and you're in. On Android, just go to whatwasthatlike.com/plus and try it out completely free. Once you've had the ad-free experience, you'll see why hundreds of other listeners are already doing it. But for now, here's another ad and then on with today's episode.
That's not just the sound of that first sip of Morning Joe. It's the sound of someone shopping for a car on Carvana from the comfort of home.
That's a good blend.
It's time to take it easy, like answering some easy questions to get pre-qualified for a car in minutes.
Talk about starting the morning right.
Just like customizing your terms so your car fits your budget.
Mm-mm-mm.
Visit Carvana.com or download the app to experience car shopping the way it should be. Convenient. Comfortable. Ah.
Hey, my name's Otis Gray, host of the Daily Book Club, a daily podcast where I read wonderful old books one chapter at a time. Simple as that. Whether you want to get engaged and lost in a fascinating story that has stood the test of time, or just relax to a good book, listen to the Daily Book Club to get wrapped up or unwind during your day. We'll read classic stories like Pride and Prejudice, The Enchanted April, The Wind in the Willows, beautiful stories all told from start to finish. And you can even do a real book club. Tune into the Daily Book Club Discord and discuss the readings with other book club listeners. However you want to listen, it's your choice. Subscribe to the Daily Book Club on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and everywhere else. New episodes every single day. So sit back, relax, and get lost in the Daily Book Club.
What Was That Like? Contains adult language and content and is not intended for all audiences. Listener discretion is advised.
Claw marks from his nails all over my shin. He was ripping my shin open with his teeth.
Welcome to What Was That Like? I'm your host, Scott Johnson. This is the show where we talk to regular people, people just like you or just like me, who have found themselves in an extremely unusual situation. We'll hear their stories and get inside their head because we all want to know, what was that like? More information about each episode at whatwasthatlike.com. Here we go. Today's conversation is with Lauren. A few years ago, Lauren worked at a private zoo here in the United States, and one of her jobs was to take care of the monkeys. But these weren't just any monkeys. These were howler monkeys. You want to guess how howler monkeys earned that name? You got it, because they howl. But it's probably not the kind of sound you expect to hear when you think of howling. You know, you kind of think of a dog with that kind of high-pitched noise. It's kind of charming because it seems like they're trying to sing. Nope, this is something very different. This is what a howler monkey sounds like. Yeah, that's not a dog. That sounds more like something from The Exorcist, but that's just what they do. Part of Lauren's job was giving the howler monkeys their food and water. But there was one howler in particular that didn't like Lauren. And one day, he had a brief opportunity to act on it, and he took it. This experience led Lauren to actually leave her career with animals. She went on to graduate school and is now a high school science teacher, teaching earth science and biology. And that knowledge plays a part in the podcast that she co-hosts with her fiancé, Nick. It's called Just Nah Science. You can check that out at justnascience.com. That's JustnaScience.com. Right now, What Was That Like is supported only by the listeners. If you like this show, I invite you to join the others who help out with a dollar or a few dollars each month, and you can do that at whatwasthatlike.com/support. And now let's hear from Lauren about her encounter with the howler monkey. Would you ever consider having a pet monkey for yourself?
You know, I have been asked this a lot, but absolutely not. No way. Not at all. You see a lot of those videos on like Facebook and everything about how cute monkeys are, but no, they are wild animals. I never would. And they are much dirtier than people think.
Oh, interesting.
Yes.
I've thought about one of the guests that I hope to have on a future show. I don't have anybody in particular in mind for this yet, but I'd like to talk to someone who has a monkey or a chimp for a pet and to talk about what's involved with that and, you know, the pros and cons and everything. Because everybody thinks, oh, that'd be so fun. You know, they're like little humans. But what I found scary about this story is the fact that monkeys are smart. They are very quick moving. Mm-hmm. And they have teeth and claws, and they can get angry.
Yes.
And you kind of experienced all of that in one package. But how did you end up getting a job as a zookeeper?
Well, my undergrad degree was in environmental studies, and I kind of ultimately wanted to go into wildlife conservation. So right out of college, I started working at an animal shelter, and then from there I got an internship at a big cat sanctuary down in Arkansas, learned some of the ropes, and then finally landed a job at a zoo with a whole menagerie of animals, including monkeys, because my friend had worked in the office there and they had an opening, so she reached out and just kind of ended up falling into some of these roles.
It pays to know people, right?
Yeah, definitely.
Plus, of course, with your background, I'm an animal lover, and to me, I've got kind of mixed feelings about it. It seems like working with animals like that all day, so it's like a dream job. But on the other hand, from a philosophical or moral standpoint, keeping animals in cages, it's kind of against my grain as well, you know, that they should be free. But it would be definitely an interesting place to work. So what were all the types of animals that you were taking care of there?
So at that zoo in particular, I feel like I tell people all the time, I kind of had all the leftovers. So I had everything from different species of monkeys. I had flamingos, snowy owls, sloths, aardvarks, you name it. I had an array of animals.
Wow, that is quite a variety. Yeah.
Yeah. So I had to learn a lot very quickly.
What did you do with them aside from feeding them? What were your duties there?
Well, the main part of the job, and like you said, a lot of people think, oh, working with animals, it must be great. Like, that'd be a dream. Getting to interact with them on a level like you'd want to is the last thing you get to do. It's basically cleaning. You know, you're cleaning up all of them, whether it's their food that they threw around, feces, everything. You're totally changing over their cages. So like the straw, the hay, whatever they have in there. And then you're just trying to build enrichment for them to kind of keep them stimulated. And then if you have time afterwards, you can do like try to build relationships.
Because they see you every day. So they're... Yeah. Inevitably, there'd be some kind of a relationship being built there,
right.
Good or bad, it sounds like. Okay, so let's talk about this particular attack. Before we get into that, though, can you describe how was the cage area laid out?
Right, so in a lot of zoo enclosures, you have, you know, the main enclosure, and when you first step into it, you're in what's called the keeper area. So that's where you may keep some tools for cleaning, maybe some extra water, bare bones basic tools, but that is your area that the animal does not go into.
So that's like a room.
Right. So okay. It's almost like a partition in between you and the animal space. So then beyond that, there's like a gate and a door of some sort for whatever animal you have, and then that's their space.
And how many monkeys were in this particular enclosure?
So you had three total. You had the male howler, the female, and then they had just had a baby. So he was mainly on the mom's back or belly at that time.
So a howler family.
Yes.
Can you talk about what is a howler monkey? How is it different from other types of monkeys?
Hallies are pretty interesting monkeys. They're generally found in South America, and they're known for having this, almost looks like an enlarged Adam's apple or like a balloon on their throat, which allows them to do like these incredibly loud and almost scary sounding like territorial calls or danger calls, whatever is happening, but they can be heard from like miles away with this.
And how big are they?
It's tough to say. Well, I learned that day that there are a lot more hair than you'd expect. But overall, I'd say the male would be at least probably like 2.5 feet tall if he were standing up. And you know, they don't look that big, but I could tell you he can cover you from your knee down to your ankle completely. So I learned that.
And I guess the reason they have the name is because they actually howl.
Right.
When I hear that or when I picture that, I always think of the scene in Harry Potter where Ron Weasley got the howler card, you know, that screamed at him while he was sitting at the table there. But they do make a lot of noise, right?
Ton of noise, yep.
And what's their mouth like? Do they have a lot of, is like a human mouth or is like an animal mouth with lots of sharp teeth and stuff?
It does kind of look like a human mouth, except their canines are much, much bigger. Even though they're generally on like a vegetarian type diet, they still have fairly large canines. I'd say about an inch long, and they're definitely sharp. So definitely for, you know, things like being territorial and defending their families, it's mainly used a lot for that.
And you mentioned that this particular one, which one was it in the family?
It was the male. Absolutely.
The male, okay. Yeah. And I know you've written that he had a distinct dislike for you. Why do you think that was?
From day one, you know, when they first were just introducing me to the job and to the animals that were going to be in my section, I just remember from day one, like, I think I screwed this up with him because I don't know if it was my energy, you know, just like they're really just like people. And like, there's some people you just don't mesh with and you don't click with. They're the same. And I think maybe I came on too strong or I just too alpha of a personality for him that he was just not having me from day one.
Yeah. You only get one chance to make a good first impression.
Yeah.
With people or monkeys. All right. Well, just take us through that day. Take us like minute by minute. Just, you know, tell us what happened.
Being that this was a private zoo, we were generally not open to the public. So only one day a month on member day could people come and be brought around by other zoo staff and see the animals. So of course, on all days, this happened on a member day. And, you know, you have a ton of work to get done before people arrive around usually 10 a.m. So it is first thing in the morning around probably a little bit before 8 a.m. and I start to do my morning checks. So every morning as a zookeeper, before you do anything else, you want to go check, make sure your animals are okay, nothing happened overnight, they have water, etc. So I got down to my howler enclosure and they saw me come and they always run inside when they see me because the male does not like to leave me unattended. He always wanted to see what I was doing and give me a hard time about everything. So first thing you do, you enter the keeper area. You make sure everything's good, nothing broke. And as always, they had flipped their water bowl overnight. And this was something that generally happened every night. And I would come in to see every morning. And I had really been bugging the zoo staff to do something about this. Because we had some other monkeys on the property that they had their water bowls in specific kind of were like kind of sectioned off so that they couldn't be flipped. And they were like in these held down by metal grates. So, you know, they would make sure they had water all night. There were no issues. And more importantly, it was very safe for the keeper to go in and replace the water. But for whatever reason, they were kind of dragging their feet on doing it with the howlers. So, you know, I go in again, the water bowl's flipped and it's kind of in the middle of their enclosure. So it's a little bit far in for me to reach. So I had to use one of my tools to kind of open the feed door and reach and get it. So,
and how big is that opening in the feed door?
Right. So the feed door should only be as big as the bowls need to be go in and out. And it generally was like, it was just big enough for the food and water bowls to come in and out. But, you know, I was about to find out that it was also big enough for the male howler to get out, which I don't think anybody ever assumed or realized because with their hair, you know, they look a lot bigger, but just like a dog, when it gets wet, you're like, oh, wow, you're actually a lot smaller than we thought.
Yeah.
So, unfortunately, being the howler didn't like me very much. Every morning when I would come in to give them fresh water and, you know, take their bowl, I would put water in it and I would slide it back in. All he would see is me taking something of his. So he would always give me a hard time. Sometimes he would pull back on the bowl, and it was just never in a 1-2-3 type of thing. I was always in there for a few minutes.
I made a decision a long time ago. When I'm out riding my bike each morning and I cross paths with someone, I always smile at that person. And most people smile back. But I do it because even though it's a little thing, it makes a big difference for me and maybe for them. It's just a fact. Small actions can bring big benefits. In the same way, it's also true that taking care of your gut can support the health of the rest of your body. Seed's DSO1 Daily Symbiotic benefits not just your gut, but your skin and heart health too. Seed DSO1 is part of my morning routine. If you can call it a routine, it's just two little capsules. And I feel amazing. It helps maintain the health of my heart, and it promotes regularity, which I can attest to. Sorry, that may be a little TMI there. For me, it's great that it's vegan, but it's also sugar-free, soy-free, peanut-free, gluten-free, and has no preservatives. It doesn't even need refrigeration. DSO1 has so many benefits, including the fact that it's backed by a lot of science, but I've barely scratched the surface here. What I can say, though, is that my body feels great. And I've got a promo code so you can see the benefits for yourself.
Trust your gut with Seed's DS01 Daily Symbiotic. Go to seed.com/what and use code 25what to get 25% off your first month. That's 25% off your first month of Seed's DS01 Daily Symbiotic at seed.com/what. Code 25what.
Here's my hot take for today. If you see something advertised as a free trial, it might cost you more than you expect. At least that's my experience. I give up my credit card to try something for free for a week, then I forget about it, and now I'm paying for it every month without even noticing it. But when I signed up for Rocket Money, that ridiculous waste came to a screeching halt. Rocket Money is a personal finance app that finds and cancels your unwanted subscriptions. It monitors your spending, and it helps you lower your bills so you can grow your savings. It lets you see all of your subscriptions listed right there in one place. When you see a subscription you're paying for but you don't want, do you really want to spend an hour on the phone trying to track down some customer service agent to cancel it? Rocket Money can help you get rid of it with just a few taps. They also give me this great dashboard so I can see what I've spent this month compared to last month. And they'll even try to negotiate lower bills for me by up to 20%, so I'm spending less and saving more. Rocket Money has over 5 million users and has saved a total of $500 million in canceled subscriptions, saving members up to $740 a year when using all the app's features.
Stop wasting money on things you don't use. Cancel your unwanted subscriptions by going to rocketmoney.com/whatwas. That's rocketmoney.com/whatwas. rocketmoney.com/whatwas.
I'll confess, sometimes I let my podcast playlist get out of hand and I get way behind. But there's one show that I subscribe to and any new episode goes right to the top of the queue. That's the Jordan Harbinger Show. That's because I never have to figure out, okay, is this one going to be interesting or do I wait for the next one like I do for some shows? Because Jordan's conversations are always a must listen for me. He talks to fascinating people from any category you can think of. Authors, scientists, athletes, you name it. He's talked to undercover cops who posed as mafia and the actual career mafia hitmen. And the stories he gets out of these people, just incredible. In one episode, he talked to Paul Holes. You might know that name if you're into true crime. He's the former investigator who uses really advanced methods to solve cold cases, including the Golden State Killer. And another one I really enjoyed was with Sam Harris, an author and neuroscientist who promotes skepticism, and he doesn't mind taking on some seriously controversial topics like politics or religion. That one's going to make you think. Whenever a new episode of the Jordan Harbinger Show pops up, I already know it's going to be an episode that I'll enjoy listening to, and I'll bet you will too. For some episode recommendations, check out jordanharbinger.com/start. Or search for the Jordan Harbinger Show. That's H-A-R-B as in boy, I-N as in Nancy, G-E-R, on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen to podcasts.
So I had to grab like one of the sticks and I was trying to drag out the bowl and trying to do it so that I didn't like really bother them, and especially with the new baby in there. But, you know, the male was not having it. So the one odd thing I found about that morning is that just as I was about to bring the bowl all the way out through the feed door, I noticed him backing up in the enclosure. I thought that was kind of odd that he was giving me some space, but maybe he was finally maturing. And mind you, the feed slot, thankfully, is right on, it's on the floor. So I had to like kind of crouch down to do this. And as the bowl is right in the doorway, he rushes the door and he is running full speed. And man, he was there in like a split second. So now I couldn't close the door back all the way because the bowl was in the way. And now the monkey's half through the way. So I made the split second decision to kind of, I knew he was coming through that door. So I decided it'd be better for me to stand up so my face wasn't right there. And, you know, so looking.
I'm trying to picture this. You, sure. you had the opening for the bowl, mm-hmm. and that was the only opening. Was the rest of yes. the a solid wall, or was it glass so you could see what he was doing?
So the rest is like almost like a fence where you could like stick food and things through the fence, and I would often do that for them for a little enrichment. But yeah, it was all.
So you could see him even though you weren't down at the hole. Okay.
Yeah, I could see them perfectly. I could have put my fingers through the cage if I wouldn't do that with him, but you know.
Right. So that's how you knew he had backed up. And
yep.
I mean, it seems like this was all premeditated on his part.
Well, right? You know, I was just going to say hindsight's always 20/20. And I, of course, after this had happened, I've played this back again and again in my head. And I had realized the weeks leading up to this, I had noticed him hanging around that door more and more. He would like put his hands on it. He would put himself up against it. And looking back now, I realized he was really measuring it up and kind of assessing the situation, because he would see his bowls going in and out of every day. He didn't like it. Mm-hmm. So he was kind of, I really feel like he was planning this, as scary as wow. that sounds, for some time.
That is incredible. Okay. Yeah.
So, you know, at this point, he had just pushed through the bowl in the door. Now, I had stood back up, and he immediately latches on to my right leg. So,
with his hands?
Just completely engulfed it. So,
so he was all the way through the hole now?
All the way through the hole. Because he shot through that hole like a rocket. Like, it happened so fast, I can't even describe it to you. So, he got me from my knee down to my ankle. And luckily, that's the only area he attacked, and for some reason he was just kind of really focused, hyper-focused on that area. And yeah, he kind of, his body just took over the entire shin of my right leg. And being that they have a prehensile tail, you know, he was wrapped around it and there was really no getting him off at that time. It was like an octopus being kind of wrapped on you. And immediately, clawing, like they had pretty long fingernails, like just like ours. They seem a little thicker though, so they're a little bit more, do more damage. So clawing, I had claw marks from his nails all over my shin. He was ripping my shin open with his teeth.
But you were wearing pants at the time, right? Long pants, like jeans?
I was wearing jeans and I was no longer wearing jeans from the knee down. So he had completely ripped my jeans off. I couldn't even tell you the instance he did it so fast. Before I even knew it, it was just a flap of jean open on that area now. So obviously I was in complete shock at this moment. I was like, I can't believe this is happening. And just like people describe or you see in the movies, but you know, you don't believe it until it happens to you, a million things ran through my head. And so fast. So I'm thinking to myself, okay, I have a radio on my hip. I could call for help. But how would someone even get in here? Because now we're basically tussling in the keeper area. So they couldn't get in without him attacking them or with him completely escaping to the outside. I also had like kind of like a Swiss Army knife Leatherman tool on my hip. So do I try to use that? Do I use the knife to try to get him off me? But I really didn't want to injure him. And God forbid kill him. As upset as I was at him right in the moment, I still didn't want to hurt him. So I'm going through all these ideas in my head, and I figured the best thing I could do at that moment was to not try to use my hands to pull him off me, because he definitely would have bit fingers off, and then use that as leverage to probably climb up my arm, get to my face and my neck, where no doubt, if he really wanted to, he probably could have killed me. So I thought, looking at the partition or the fence that kind of separates the keeper area from the animal area, and I figured I'm just going to try to kick him a few times into like some of the wooden posts in there. And that was going to be my best shot. So I gave him a few good kicks into it since he was just wrapped on my leg. And luckily it kind of like snapped him out of it. And he ended up jumping off my leg and then scurrying up to the diagonal corner of the keeper area from me. So now he's like up high looking down on me in his corner, and I'm backed into mine.
But you're still in the same room, obviously.
Still in the same room. And I kind of banked on this idea that he was now scared himself, because it kind of seemed like it snapped him out of it. And he had never been in the keeper area before, so this was new territory for him. And I think he felt a little uncomfortable. So I was like, I need to do something quick, because he can dive bomb right on my face and it can go really south again. Or I grabbed, we had a shepherd stick on the wall, a big wooden shepherd stick, just like Bo Peep would use. And I kind of just grabbed that and I just used that to kind of keep distance with him. And with the other hand, I unlocked the big door that separates the keeper area and the animal area. The one that I would go through, you know, if I needed to go in and do like a big change up of the enclosure. Obviously, if the animals weren't in there.
So you're opening the door now where the mother and baby were.
Right. But luckily, and I had made note of this, she had run outside to the outside area. She was scared, and she was never an animal that was aggressive with me. So I kind of banked on her not coming back in. Also, she probably wanted to keep the baby out of the situation as well.
Right.
So I noticed she was outside. And it was just me and him inside. So I threw this door open. I took that chance that she wasn't going to come back in. Threw it open as wide as I could while keeping the shepherd stick, like, to keep distance up at him. And luckily, he decided to just scurry back in, because, like I said, I'm sure he felt uncomfortable at that time. And as soon as he got back in, I just dropped everything and I closed every door back up, made sure everything was locked. He wasn't going to come back out at me or anyone who came in after me to check on the situation. And then I completely went back outside and left the building. And I just took a deep breath and kind of reassessed what just happened. Because at this point, nobody knew.
Nobody was around.
No, everyone was, you know, off in the zoo in their own sections doing their morning checks. So it was scary to think that, like, wow, maybe we should be working in pairs, or, you know, all these ideas start coming into you. But I still had to deal with the situation at hand, right? So I radioed for my curator, my boss. And I just said, hey, where are you? And she said, I'm up at the main barn. And I was like, all right, stay there. And I'm sure one of the other keepers at the time, the carnivore keeper, you know, she heard the call come in. And, you know, she told me she could tell there was something off with the tone in my voice. So she had actually met us up at the main barn as well. But I had to get myself from the back of the zoo now back up to the main barn.
How far was that?
Maybe like a quarter mile. Maybe a little bit less, but I was like, it was all uphill. So I was like, I'm not walking up there right now. And then, so I jumped in my RTV vehicle that I had to kind of bring supplies around the zoo. And if anyone knows, those RTV vehicles, those pedals are so stiff. And the last thing I wanted to do right now was like press down this hard pedal with my leg that's just been ripped up. But, you know, I just, you know, my adrenaline was still rushing. So I just did it. I just bared through it. And I met them up at the main barn. And oddly enough, my curator was in the safe at the time that had all the trank guns and everything. And she was probably just like making sure everything was accounted for. I'm like, well, that would have been good like 5 minutes ago. But I was like, we have a problem, I told her. And she peeks her head over the safe door and she looks at me. And I was like, so the male howler came through the feed door and really got me good on the leg. And she sees my leg and she's like, oh my God. So they had me sit down. The carnivore keeper comes in at that point. And right now you just see like my pants are very bloody. So they open the flap of my jean, they like pull it off my leg, and they see like the three huge bites that he just tore into my leg with, and they're like, oh my God. And that was like really the first time I myself had looked at the damage, because I didn't want to look before I got to somebody else, because I didn't want to like pass out, God forbid, or just be like really freaked out. And it was worse than I could really imagine, just because, you know, on TV you see these situations where people are fighting and maybe someone stabbed with a knife, right? But a knife is a nice clean cut. This was the furthest thing from a clean cut I could see. Like, chewed up flesh is something you have to see it to really imagine. Very scary looking.
Especially your own.
Yes, especially your own. And I kept saying to myself, like, I can't believe this just happened. You know, did this really happen? So, you know, they didn't call an ambulance because I don't think they wanted that kind of negative exposure coming to the zoo, especially when you have members arriving shortly, very wealthy members at that.
Wealthy members meaning donors to the zoo?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure a membership was close to $100,000 for the year, $100,000. So, yeah, very wealthy people arriving to the zoo. So they wanted to get me out of there as fast as they could and not have any remnants of what happened. So they called the owner and they told her to come and told her to bring me to the hospital. And, you know, she did just that. And they kind of assessed, they just gave me some cold packs. I don't think those helped at all. But, you know, they drove me to the hospital. And at this point, you know, they put me in a wheelchair and then she wheels me in and they're checking me in. And I remember at this moment, I felt so bad because there was this mother and this young daughter in the waiting area as well. And her daughter's looking at me and I'm trying to signal to her like not to look, you know, like it was just, I didn't want her to get upset. Like it was rough to look at. And the girl looked like she had seen a ghost. So I'm pretty sure I traumatized her, unfortunately.
But, well, when you're in an ER, you can see just about anything.
I know. Yeah. Poor girl. But, you know, there was a team of doctors that brought me in, and at this point, my adrenaline's kind of wearing off a little bit. And they're asking me all these questions, and it was a little awkward because the owner of the zoo was there and asked me what happened, and I didn't want to get anyone in trouble, but I wanted to be honest so they could take care of me like the way they needed to. And they're like, oh my God, a howler monkey? Like, where was this? We didn't even know there was a zoo in the area.
Hey, this is Scott. Did you know we offer a premium feed of this show that is completely ad-free and there are bonus episodes? Go to whatwasthatlike.com/plus or just click the link in the show notes of any episode to learn more and to sign up. If you're listening on Apple Podcasts, you can sign up right there in the app by clicking try free at the top of the episode list. And I hope to see you in the premium feed soon.
So they had to call the CDC because they didn't know if there was any like disease alerts out for howlers. Luckily, there wasn't. They're like, good thing this wasn't a rhesus macaque monkey because they are, you know, full of diseases that could be transmitted to humans. So I was good with that. You know, they numbed me up and they gave me a total of only 8 stitches. They said, normally, if this was any other kind of wound, you would have gotten about 50 between the 3 bites, but you can't close up animal wounds all the way because it will get infected, or it's just more likely to get infected. Like animal bites, wounds need to kind of drain and sort of ooze for a few days to make sure everything goes well.
Because of the bacteria in an animal's mouth.
Absolutely.
Being transmitted.
Yep. So, you know, at this point, they stitch me up, they wrap me in gauze that are almost instantly bloody. So my whole leg down from the knee to the ankle on the right side was wrapped in bloody gauze. I feel like I looked like a war victim, you know, like had war injuries limping out of there.
Had the people at the ER, had they ever seen a monkey attack before?
No. Some of the women that were working on me definitely had not. And some had just, you know, they didn't mention it, but they were pretty excited, but also, you know, dumbfounded as well. Mm-hmm. I guess never a dull day at the ER.
I guess, yeah. Well, I recently did an episode with a man who was attacked by an alligator.
I saw.
And when he was at the hospital, you know, it's like they were all calling, hey, we got a gator attack. Come over here. Look at this, you know. So it's probably the same thing.
Yeah, there was definitely more people that maybe needed to be in the room, probably just to kind of see the situation. Because it was different than you normally see. I'm sure they've seen dog bites and whatnot, but that's what they said. Dog bites is what they normally see, but monkey, that was a new one. So then at this point, yeah, they bring me back to the zoo, and I had to call my friend to come pick me up, and she came with her boyfriend so they could grab my car as well. I contacted her before this interview, and I said, hey, I'm giving this interview about this monkey attack. I was like, is there anything particular to you that stood out about that day? And she said, well, when you called me, she goes, you're never going to believe what just happened. She's like, but given you worked in the zoo, she's like, it was definitely plausible. And then you were like, oh, it's bad, but at least it didn't get my face. And when she came to pick me up, she's like, your adrenaline is definitely still running because you were not really absorbing the full impact of what just happened. She's like, you know, you were trying to get in the car yourself, and you were telling me that we were going to go to this barbecue and we had to get ice for the barbecue. And she's like, because you have to keep in mind, as a zookeeper, you have essentially no social life. Okay? My weekends were Tuesdays and Wednesdays for a year at this point. So this was also the first Saturday. Essentially, I didn't have work for the rest of the day. And someone I knew was throwing a barbecue, and all I wanted to do was go because I felt pretty good at that point. You know, like they had numbed me up and they gave me some painkillers. I'm like, yeah, let's just go to the barbecue for a few hours. You know, I haven't been out in the longest time. And we went, and there was a lot of people there I was meeting for the first time, and they were like, what happened to your leg? And I was like, I was attacked by a monkey.
You're like the star of the show, right?
Although I don't think most people believe me. They're like, yeah, okay. And they just walk away because I'm sitting there with my leg like propped up on a chair. She had to keep it elevated. I probably looked insane to most people. But once the painkillers wore off, I was definitely ready to go home. I was like, oh my God, get me out of here. And we did. And that was, whew, what a day.
What would have prevented this from happening? Just the water bowl being secure so you didn't have to reach in? But I mean, there may be, are there any other reasons you'd have to reach in to the enclosure?
Just to either give food or water or to obtain the bowls back, right? Because you don't want a lot of like old food bowls sitting there that can get gross pretty quickly. But yeah, it's just to take in and out the bowls mainly. Otherwise, there is no reason for me to go into the enclosure. Everything should be coming through these feed doors.
But we've already determined the feed door is only big enough for the water bowl to get through, and the monkey can fit in that space.
Right. So
how do you prevent this?
Well, I think they realized afterwards that maybe this wasn't the proper enclosure for these animals. You know, I'm sure they never assumed or guessed that they would be able to fit through a door they weren't supposed to. But yeah, otherwise securing those food bowls like the other monkeys had is a surefire way to fix this problem.
Yeah. And in most cases, the monkey wouldn't have any desire or need to try to fit through that little hole.
No.
It's just because of his anger toward you.
Right. And you have to remember too, like, they spend 24 hours a day in these enclosures, 365 days a year. I know it gets boring sometimes, and they know every inch of that enclosure better than you with their eyes closed. So anything that's new and different and they can get to a new part, I'm sure they want to in a heartbeat because they're just sick of their normal day-to-day.
After this, I mean, obviously you got well enough that you could go back to work. Did you end up dealing with this monkey again after that?
Yeah, well, they only gave me 3 days till I had to come back, which definitely did not seem like enough. But I begged and pleaded with them to take him out of my section after this, or, you know, do something so that him and I were not working together. And they just never did. And I tell you, that definitely affected me, and it definitely affected our relationship, employee-employer relationship, because it was incredibly stressful going back to his enclosure every day. I felt like I was reliving it every time. And then from then on, I wouldn't even go into the enclosure unless I looked through the windows first and made sure everything was closed really from the outside. Like, I was overcautious at this point. And then it was just, I never went anywhere without an intern after that. Like, I wanted somebody with me because it was incredibly stressful for me going back in there with him.
I can imagine. I mean, the stress of having to kind of relive that when you have to go back in and deal with this same monkey again. But was there any value in, you know, the idea of facing your fear and, you know, getting past it by going back in there?
No. No, okay. I mean, the only thing I can think of really is like, it was a stark reminder of that you're dealing with wild animals and to never let your guard down. But I kind of learned that lesson already without having to go back in there every single day.
Yeah, I can understand the stress that it would add from, like what you said, an employer-employee relationship. You know, they're supposed to have your back, and they're sending you back into the war zone.
I know, and I think it was like maybe like two or three months after that, you know, the monkeys were due for some of their vaccines and their shots, and they asked me if I wanted to go into the animal section with the vet and just some nets to try to capture them so we could give them their vaccines. And I was like, you think I am the best person to do this? I don't think so. No. And so after that attack, I said I lasted maybe 6 more months before I realized that my safety probably wasn't a high priority for them. And it just wasn't worth it for me to be there.
And it seems like there, if you want to work with animals, there are a lot of other options other than, you know, being in a cage with a dangerous monkey.
Yeah. I don't know. There are, but you know, there are no 2 days alike when you work with animals. And that's something I think a lot of people need to be cautious of when it comes to like having exotic pets, which I don't really recommend. But, you know, you have to really be on your game every single day. And that's, you know, that wears on you after a while too, you know, to be on all the time.
Right, right. Because it's so easy when you get into a routine, you let your guard down, and then that's when the bad stuff happens. Yeah,
absolutely.
It seems kind of weird, you know, this monkey didn't like you. You seem like a nice person.
Well, thank you.
Before we wrap it up here, I want you to tell us about, you have a podcast. Can you tell us about that, what it's about?
Yeah, so our podcast, I do the podcast with my fiance, Nick, and it's called Just Nas Science. And it's basically this comedy, but also educational aspect of Twitter science. So we find some ridiculous science or pseudoscience on Twitter, and we kind of, you know, break it down, tell you why it's so ridiculous and why it's not true, and then we build you back up with some evidence-based facts, let you know the real science behind everything.
Okay. What's an example of something you would talk about?
Well, our first and one of my favorite episodes was about flat Earth. You know, there's a lot of false information out there about the Earth and this flat Earth movement. So we kind of broke down some Earth science about it and some physics a little bit about why the Earth isn't flat, why it couldn't be flat, and just some of the crazy things people say. And, you know, where do they come up with this stuff? So,
yeah, that one in particular seems like, how does it ever get any traction or have any credibility with anyone?
Amazing, you know? Yeah, but it does. It gets a lot of traction.
That is crazy. Okay, so you do this podcast, and tell me the name of it again. I mean, and can you explain the name?
Sure, it's Just Nas Science. And the reason why we picked this name is because Na is basically on the periodic table. It's a portion of salt, you know, NaCl. So the whole idea is that we're getting salty about bad science, bad social media science. And so every episode starts with a title, something like, is climate change a scam? Nah. You know, like, no, that's not true. And no way, this could be it. So it kind of has this double meaning about being salty about it and just being like, nah, this is not true at all.
That's interesting. When I saw the title, I could see that, like, nah, that's not true, but I didn't catch the periodic table reference with sodium. That's cool. Okay. All right. So how can people find your show, or how can people contact you if they would like to?
Yeah, absolutely. So you can definitely go to our website at justnasscience.com. And from there, you could see all of our social media handles, our Twitter handle, our Instagram. We have a Facebook page, and even our emails up there. It's justnapodcast@gmail.com. So you could reach out to us through any of those outlets.
All right. I'll have all those links in the show notes as well for this episode for anybody who wants to find that. Lauren, thanks for coming on the show and telling us this story. I think from after hearing what you've said, I'm just going to stick with my two Yorkies and not have any wild animals as pets.
Sounds like a plan. Thank you so much for having me on.
Hey, this is Scott again. You know something? There are so many stories out there that would be great for this podcast. I mean, today's show is episode 41, and I feel like I've barely scratched the surface. Maybe you have a story, or maybe you know someone who has been through something extremely unusual and would want to come on the show and tell about it. But if you have a story in mind, you should also be aware that there are a few stories that I typically don't do. I don't do anything related to the paranormal. I don't usually do stories that are primarily medically related, like medical miracles, so to speak, and I don't do stories where the primary topic is drugs or sex. So what stories would I be interested in? Well, there are a few specific stories that I'm looking for right now, so be on the lookout for these. I'm looking for someone who discovered a suicide, like a friend or a family member, someone who survived falling off a cruise ship while underway, someone who has been rescued after being buried in an avalanche, a passenger in a car when it was hit by a train, someone who forgot a baby locked in a car. Unfortunately, that happens in Florida here all too often. Someone who was falsely accused of child sex offenses and later exonerated. Someone who was a victim of human trafficking by a non-family member and then rescued. Someone who won the showcase on The Price is Right, and someone who has a pet chimpanzee, kind of related to today's show. And of course, as I mentioned earlier, there are absolutely a ton of story ideas that I haven't even thought of yet. So I'm open to ideas from you. Remember, it has to be really unusual. It has to be something that when you look down at your phone and you see that new episode is out, you look at the title and say, okay, I have to hear that story. So if you have something, email me at scott@whatwasthatlike.com or submit it from the website. And don't forget to join our private Facebook group. There's some great discussions going on over there. And I'll see you in 2 weeks.